Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, the 9th of July, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We took a look at legal gambling on the show as we had just passed the 40-year anniversary of the opening of the Mashantucket Pequot High Stakes Bingo Hall. Republican State Rep. Karen Reddington Hughes dropped by to talk about a recent scary bear encounter in the town of Warren, while former GOP State Senate leader John McKinney also dropped by for his weekly chat.
You know, I could probably count, maybe not on one hand, maybe not on two or three hands, but maybe if I use my fourth, fifth, and sixth hands here. But suffice it to say, I can probably count not too high. It certainly wouldn't get to 100. It's not going to get to 50 or 40. But I could probably count the number of times in my life, in my adult life, and actually in my teen years, starting into my adult life here, that I have gambled on something. You know what I mean? It's just, I find it something fascinating to observe, to watch people do, to look at point spreads or odds from a mathematical point of view. That stuff fascinates me. But I've never succumbed, and I use that word cautiously here because I'm not going to sit here and accuse you people who enjoy legal gambling and otherwise that you're some sort of sickos. No, you're not. But I've never had the drive to do this on any bit of a consistent basis. You know, for example, I may have dabbled in some, shall we say, non-legal football wagering once or twice. You can probably count on two hands the number of times or the numbers of times that I've bought a Powerball ticket or a scratch-off or a Connecticut Lottery ticket. Again, it's not to besmirch or belittle these companies. It's what they do. They make money on it. Millions and millions and millions of bucks have flowed into the state coffers because of people who like to gamble. They look at it as something that an adult should do, whether it's smoking or drinking or gambling or doing anything that may be considered a vice. They do it. I worked for about 4 months in Las Vegas. Maybe I played two or three hands of blackjack and walked away and said, no, not for me. What are you driving at, Paul, here? Well, I wanted to start with this because I found this interesting, and we'll get to all the other news of the day here, watching a whole bunch of state, local, and national stories here. The Hearst people, the Connecticut Insider people at Hearst, Luca Powell's story. This story actually was posted a few days ago, 5 days ago. Happy birthday, America, on the 4th of July, 40 years after the first bingo hall, gamblers in Connecticut have lost $56 billion, not million, $56 billion. Now, again, nobody put any sort of firearm to their heads to do this. You know, nobody is, you know, threatened people. You have to do this. This started as the story notes here, and it's a long and a very detailed story. It was 40 years ago in 1986. Remember what came before Foxwoods and, you know, before Foxwoods and the Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation and Mohegan Sun and all that? What was the first thing? Do you remember now? If you saw this story, it probably jogged your memory enough to do this. Remember what that was? Yes, they had a high stakes bingo parlor. Remember that? Yes. Mashantucket Pequot High Stakes Bingo. And it started on a Saturday in 1986, 40 years ago, this past Sunday. The hall, it says here in Luca Powell's story, would soon welcome busloads of players for the first night of shouting out numbers and declaring winners. On the prize list were cars, boats, trips to Acapulco. It's according to a news article from that year. The game's organizer promised the highest prizes in New England. And, you know, that went on to, you know, develop into Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun and the Mohegan Sun Arena. And suddenly Vegas and Atlantic City had a little bit of competition right here in furry, friendly little Connecticut, right? So fast forward to today, and you look at the numbers here, And 40 years after the first bingo hall, there's kind of a juxtaposition here. Gamblers, again, nobody's forcing these people to do anything. This is maybe they don't play golf, maybe they don't smoke, maybe they don't take vacations, but they do spend maybe a few hundred bucks or a few thousand bucks a year at games of chance. And that's what we do in the state of our own free will. But the juxtaposition is really, really interesting. And I have some hard numbers for you coming back after we do this. So let's start with this. And again, I'm not judging anybody if they gamble. I'm just, and I put the question up as our question of the day, because this has always fascinated me. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. As far as what people have won and lost and how much the state has made versus how much the tribal nation has made. And again, they're fine people. They're working within the purvey of the laws and regulations that were laid out by the state years and years ago. But do you gamble legally in this state? Why or why not? Gamblers in the state, according to this story, have lost. And again, of their own volition here, I would think, they've lost $56 billion in 40 years. A lot of money. Even in a trillionaire Elon Musk world, right? $56 billion is a significant amount of ching. It's a lot of cash. It's a lot of dead presidents. The green jeebus, yes. $56 billion with a B, not million. $56 billion in 40 years. Losses. Now, some people have won, obviously. But do you gamble legally in this state? Why or why not? Have you never done it? Have you done it from day one? Remember, we also have the lottery games, which started way back in 1972. But I'm going to juxtapose a couple of numbers here when we come back. And is the state really getting a fair shake here or not? And again, the state and Governor Weicker, you remember, he was negotiating some of this stuff about the slot machines and we don't get any revenue from the table games. But what do you think? Have you gambled in this state legally? Do you do it? Do you never do it? Did you do it at one time and stop? You tell me. Why or why not? As we're up and underway right here at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Yeah, Connecticut Today, your old buddy, your old pal, Paul Pacelli right here. Hey, how are you? You good? That's good. You good over there? All right, that's good. You're getting better? All right. All righty then, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. We begin today talking about legal gambling. I have nothing against that. I thought it should have happened years before it did. But this past weekend was the 40th celebration, 40th anniversary of anything beyond church raffles and the Connecticut Lottery. It's when the Mashantucket Pequot Tribe opened up, remember, before the casinos, before Foxwoods, before Mohegan Sun, they opened the high-stakes bingo room, the bingo parlor, which I guess is still there, I think. And it's part of an expansive story that Hearst and the Connecticut Insider did a couple of days ago. Very good. 40 years after the first bingo hall, Mashantucket Pequot Indian Bingo. I remember seeing the advertisements for it all over the state TV, and then no such thing as the internet back then. So in the ensuing 40 years, $56 billion has been lost by gamblers in Connecticut. Not the Indian bingo hall, but in all gambling combined, from the bingo hall to the casinos and all that. Now, on the flip side, and we're going to go to the phones momentarily, Connecticut has made about $22 billion on the gambling industry. That goes back to the start of the Connecticut Lottery way back in 1972. Remember that? With the Money Tree Lottery, and you had a color, and you had numbers and letters. It was far too complicated. But State Consumer Protection Department says Connecticut has made $22 billion on the gaming industry, and since 1972, so that'd be what, for 54 years. All right. But people have lost since the high stakes bingo parlor opened $56 billion. But I guess, do you just chalk that up to entertainment? That's right. It's what people want. It's what they want to do. You tell me, 203-333-9422. Do you gamble? Did you gamble? Do you gamble no more? Did it get a little too much for you? If you want to talk about that, talk or text. We'd love to chat with you about that and more. We'll pick it up and start it off today with Barry in Shelton. Barry, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes,
a couple of points. I like to gamble, but I do it responsibly. I used to go to the casino three to four times a year, once a season.
Yeah.
And I love to play blackjack, but they have changed things so much.
Okay.
You used to sit at a blackjack table with six people, play against the dealer, have a little camaraderie.
Yeah.
And they've changed that now. You can find a live dealer to play against, but now the minimum is $25 or $50 minimum.
Okay. Yeah.
And now you have to walk into a room, sit in front of a screen. There's a dealer up against the far wall, and the dealer is dealing against up to 100 other people on the same, you know, with their screen in front of them.
Interesting. Okay.
So you're still playing against the dealer, but it's almost like a giant video game. It takes away the camaraderie of that. And then they went around and they changed the odds. This is all after COVID, where a blackjack on a $10 bet would get you $15.
All right.
Two got you three. Now the $10 bet gets you 12.
Well.
And some other things were like a soft 17, which is an ace and a six.
Yeah.
The dealer used to have to stay. Now he has to hit. Or now he can hit, which increases his odds of winning. So they've made it more difficult, made it less appealing. And I don't go as much. If I go once a year up there, it's because my favorite restaurant's on the way.
All right.
Listen.
Listen.
Or I used to win tickets on WICC, and they run away with that.
Well, don't worry. We got good stuff coming. But having said that, so that's interesting. So you still go, but you don't go as much as you used to. Do those numbers... when I read those numbers off, were they surprising to you that gamblers have lost, and this is in total over 40 years, $56 mm-hmm. billion? Dollars, or is it just the kind of thing you say, well, this is how they like to enjoy themselves?
Oh, no, it doesn't surprise me at all. I used to tell people who've never been to Foxwoods, you drive up 95, you get off, you drive about 10 miles, you go around this mountain, and then there's this huge set of lights, and it looks like you found Oz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From the movie. Or the same thing, very similar with Mohegan Sun. And no, it doesn't surprise me because they did not build those huge places from the winners.
Yeah.
If people really realize how much a billion is,
and
many people don't. In this case, it was what? How many billion was it?
$56 billion in losses, yes. Yeah.
This is for the people who don't know. You take a 56 and put nine zeros after it.
There it is.
It's a 1,000 million.
Yeah. Over 40 years, Over 40 years.
Yeah, and that's a billion. You know, you lay those dollars end to end, and you've gone on the moon and back. Am I surprised? No. And it also, in my mind, especially with a lot of the other stuff, there are people who just have addiction problems.
Oh, sure,
You're feeding that, whatever it is, you're feeding that addiction, and you're making it too easy.
Yeah, Barry, I do have to run, my friend. Thank you, Barry, there, joining us this afternoon. 203-333-9422. One of our regulars, Barry in Shelton. Barry, thanks. Yeah, listen, I find this fascinating. The numbers fascinate me. Now, remember, we started on legal gambling, and remember what a controversy the lottery was in 1972? Oh, man, Money Tree Lottery. And how was it sold to us? Whoa, this is all going to go to the schools. Remember that? Oh, we're going to have the best educated kids anywhere in God's solar system. Well, I don't know. But I guess it now goes to the general fund. You can go on the lottery page and look. They have a pie chart and different graphs to show how it is divvied up. But what do you think of these numbers? Connecticut's made on legal gambling since 1972. The state has taken in $22 billion. But since the high stakes bingo started 40 years ago this past weekend, gamblers have lost $56 billion. What do you think of those numbers? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. All right, and for a few of those 100 years, there's been a growing controversy as to what we do about the bear population in this state. Yes, they're creatures. They're God's creatures. We all know that, but they are by definition wild animals. And now the experts, even the ones at the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, are saying, hey, they're becoming more aggressive because we're not culling the herd, and they have lost their fear of people, which is not good. And witness another of a couple of hundred recent episodes, according to Deep, when they tell us that in the town of Warren a few days ago, a woman was shocked when a bear entered her home. This is not out of the ordinary, folks. They are losing their sense of fear about humans. And now what do we do here? Well, joining us right now for a return visit on the program, she was last on, I checked, about 3 years ago, and I think it was for the exact same issue. 66th Republican Assembly District, Karen Reddington Hughes, who represents Bethlehem, Litchfield, Woodbury, Morris, and the town of Warren, where this all happened. Hey, Karen, it's Paul again. Good to have you back. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you. Great to be here. Only sorry to say that nothing has really changed. It's actually getting worse.
Yeah, Karen, so this is, I guess, is one of your constituents this happened to, and this was along Lake Warramog. What kind of an area is that? Describe the area for some of our listeners who've never been up in that neck of the woods and the bear problems that I'm sure a lot of your constituents see, maybe on a daily or weekly basis.
Sure. This is a very wooded area in Warren, Connecticut. There were actually four home invasions there, and then there was a local farm that had a calf killed by a bear as well. So these bears have really become habituated, meaning that they are no longer afraid of humans. And the suggestion of pulling in the bird seed and locking your garbage down just has not solved the problem.
Yeah, and obviously with their superior senses of smell and their hunting senses, they can. Some expert, Karen, told me that a loose garbage can and some poorly placed or placed at all bird feeders can be sniffed by these bears with their sense of smell for like a mile or a mile and a half, so they know where the food is, don't they? And they go there. But as you say, this is not solving the problem.
No, and unfortunately, you know, the bears are actually breaking into the homes, going through windows, going through screen doors. These homes are not homes where they're cooking dinner and the bear smells the food. These homes are homes where the people are not there, and then the people return to finding a home that's been absolutely trashed by a bear.
You know, Karen, my fear is, though, and again, according to Deep, this has happened dozens and dozens and dozens of times. Karen, my fear, and I'm sure you and the other folks there in that area, in your five-town area, must say that eventually, Karen, just by the law of odds, something bad is going to happen here. And then I fear the finger pointing will begin. And now what do we do? I mean, we all hope it doesn't, but I'm sure the experts are worried as well.
Well, I believe that, you know, the people that I serve on environment with, we have been really pushing for a limited bear lottery, you know, for at least the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is that our state, although we have some of the smallest population of bears, we have the largest problems with bears. Mm. So we have more home break-ins, you know, if you look at the numbers of bears that we have versus states that have 20,000, they don't have the number of home break-ins that we do. So it just goes to show you that these other states that all have hunting, that this is part of a comprehensive bear management plan. This is not something that is punitive to the animals, okay? This is basically a bear management program for the public safety of the people that need to live here.
And Karen, you mentioned other states. I think there was an article that was published about a year and a half ago. I remember reading that, as you mentioned, some of our neighboring states, I think Massachusetts has a lot more bears than we do. New Jersey does. Pennsylvania does as well. But as you say, these states, despite some of the complaints from environmentalists and the animal lobby, they say, no, we have to do this because in some ways, if we don't, it'll be worse.
Well, it's unfair to the animals. I've spoken with, you know, DEEP. I've spoken with bear biologists. What we are doing to these bear by not having any type of a hunt is unfair to them because they have further and further encroached outside of the woods into these populated areas. And it is not because they have nowhere to live. I love when people say, oh, it's because we've built on all of their forests. And we, as a state, are one of the most reforested states in the entire nation.
Yeah.
So they have more than enough places to live. It's just that people, you know, that do put bird feed out, people that do entice bear to go to different areas, it's not helpful. When they go and eat the bird seed out of one of those feeders, they get 75% more calories than they would for a whole day in the woods.
Wow.
So it's, you know, like, oh, well, would you like to go to the woods and gather berries or would you like a big granola bar?
Yeah. State Rep. Karen Reddington Hughes, Republican, the 66th Assembly District, Bethlehem, Woodbury, Litchfield, Moores, and the town of Warren. And this is where you may have seen it for you folks who maybe haven't, though. Check it out. There's a big story going around the state about a woman who came home, one of Karen's constituents, and saw that a bear had been in her home. And I guess, Karen, you know, yeah, they may be wild animals, but they know how to get in. They know how to get in through doors. They know how to at least try to open refrigerators, unscrew caps on jars. I mean, you talk about habituating here. Wow.
Yes. Well, they're very smart animals, you know, and left in the wild, I mean, the bears are very beautiful animals. It's just that what we have done in our lack of any type of bear management plan, you know, is jeopardizing public safety now.
So finally, Karen, is there a fear among legislators that you serve with, maybe in your own caucus and across the aisle, too? Is there a fear of the General Assembly as a whole and also maybe on the Environment Committee to vote for this and say we're going to regulate it? It's going to be tightly regulated. We have experts we can bring in from Connecticut and other states about bear hunting. There'll be a lottery or whatever. This isn't going to be a carpet bombing thing. But is there a fear among legislators that they will pay for this if they approve this? It'll cost them their seat?
I really don't believe so. I think that, you know, common sense is crossing the aisle at this point, because if a individual is killed in anyone's district as a result of a bear killing them, I would probably think that the governor, by some emergency, would put a bear hunt into effect.
And the governor the governor supports this, right? Am I correct there, Karen?
He didn't come right out and say it, but he did not go against it. And I look at a great example of a state where there was a bear hunt, they took it away, and then it actually, by emergency authorization, it was put back, is New Jersey.
Oh, really?
Because when they had the hunt taken away for 2 years, they had so much havoc across the entire state that the same governor that had taken it away and actually run on that platform implemented it again.
Well, we'll see. So go ahead, Karen.
There is a reason for this, and there is a correlation between the numbers of home entries and problems that we have here and the lack of a management plan.
State Representative Karen Reddington Hughes, Republican, representing House District 66, Bethlehem, Litchfield, Woodbury, Morris, and Warren, right in the heart of bear country here in Connecticut. Karen, good to have you on, and hopefully after the first of the year, you folks can get something done. Thanks, Karen. Appreciate the time. Thank you
very much.
All right. State Rep. Karen Reddington Hughes, District 66, the towns of Bethlehem, Litchfield, Morris, Woodbury, and Warren, one of her constituents. All right, we welcome this gentleman on every Thursday right about this time, a little past a quarter past the hour. It's John McKinney, former Republican state Senate leader, well-known guy in these parts for years and years, one of the panelists, too, on WTNH News 8's Capitol Report every Sunday at 10:30 in the morning. Hey, John, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. I'm at my house looking in the backyard checking for bears, and I don't see any yet. So
yeah, yeah. John, was that ever, before we get to the political stuff too and the latest on Josh Elliott, was that ever an issue when you were in office or not?
It was. It was starting to emerge. A lot of my colleagues in the northwest corner were very concerned with the bear population. That population has exploded, as you know, and we're seeing it in all parts of Connecticut now, even on the shoreline. So it was there, but it's definitely grown in urgency. And the legislature did do something in terms of allowing farmers, but in terms and people, if their dogs are being attacked, can you know, shoot at a bear. But they really do need to adopt some regulated, controlled hunt to quell the population.
Yeah, let's get to the elections here. Just happened earlier today, as many people said it would, John. I guess more T's crossed and I's dotted. Josh Elliott's going to get his almost $4 million here now for the primary.
Yes, he's going to get to spend about $1 million a week over the next 4 weeks before the August 11th primary. He's teased everybody with his first ad, which he's, you know, posted on social media, you know, for free. And to be honest with you, Paul, we knew he was, we talked about this last week, that he was going to attack the governor. What surprises me about his ad is just how personal it is. It's not really disagreeing with the governor on policy. It's really a personal attack on who he is and his wealth. And quite frankly, I'm really surprised by that.
Does that, though, not maybe say where the consultants and the people he's paying are telling him to go, John? Because, again, you and I have talked about this along with, you know, the growing sad hate of Israel and all things to do with Jews in the U.S. It seems to be you hate Jews, you hate Israel, and make sure you hate wealth and you make it personal.
Yes, I think this is, they're always consultant driven. Well, not always, but mostly consultant driven. Josh Elliott's campaign is consultant driven, and he is following this Democrat socialist wing of the party mantra in attacking Governor Lamont. What I don't think he's going to be able to do, though, is convince Democrats that Governor Lamont is this bad person. He's very well liked, even if people don't agree with him all the time. Governor Lamont recently has picked up some significant labor union support. Yes, he's following that DSA line. It's been popular around the country. A lot of Democrat incumbents seem to be losing. I just don't think that's going to happen here in Connecticut.
What did you think of his first ad there? What did you think? I thought the pacing was good. And I thought the visuals he had. Now, of course, your opponent always looks haggard, half drunk, and in black and white, which I just laughed when I saw that. But I thought, John McKinney, that Josh Elliott did a good job of introducing myself. Hey, you know, that grocery store in Hamden, that's my store. That's my parents' store. And I was a professional poker player. I mean, I went there, I said, it's pretty good. He got a lot in a few seconds.
Yes, he did. And look, to his credit, he's photogenic. His ads are, you know, well done and a little edgy, and he's an attractive candidate in that respect. But at the end of the day, I think the more you and I was surprised, Paul, he talks a lot about his legislative experience.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that if people learn about Josh Elliott, they're going to learn that he's been in government longer than Ned Lamont has. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a positive for him.
Really, you think that will people perceive that, John? You and I will, because we get paid to do this. But do you think that the average voter is going to take the time now, and maybe they will, and go online and, well, let me see what this Elliott guy has accomplished here or not?
Well, he talks about it in his ad, which I guess I was surprised with, about, you know, all his work in the legislature. He doesn't say I've been there 10 years. He's clearly going to try to let people know. Governor Lamont's been there 8 years, 8 years, 8 years. And, you know, I think we might see if the polls tighten, the Governor Lamont's team come after Josh Elliott a little bit, saying, hey, listen, he's attacked me for not being able to lower your energy bills. He's been there longer than I have, and he hasn't passed any bills. And that is the record of Josh Elliott. It is not one of accomplishing much as a legislator for 10 years.
John McKinney is the guest. Hey, John, you know, let's assume for the sake of argument here in the couple of minutes we have left, the governor wins. So he will obviously, I mean, I think it's a safe bet he won't run for a fourth term. So, again, you look toward 2030 with the governor probably stepping aside if he wins. And Mr. Blumenthal, I would assume, not going to run again. So the 4 years coming up after November are going to be four very interesting years. And you wonder, John, is anything that may happen or may not happen in November going to start projecting out almost immediately to a movement of, say, Susan Bicewicz and William Tong and Chris Murphy and Sean Scanlon and everybody jockeying like they're in a starter's gate at a race?
Yes, I think they already are, and they're chomping at the bit. I think, you know, on the Democratic side, the big questions are going to be if Senator Blumenthal doesn't run for reelection in 2028, which one of the Democrats decides, you know, that's the path I want to go down instead of running for governor. I think William Tong will probably be that candidate for the Senate seat that takes him out of the governor's race. Sean Scanlon is an attractive candidate. I keep telling people if you want to get that far ahead and talk about the governor's race in 2030 on the Democratic side, I think you need to pay very close attention to the mayor of Stamford, Carolyn Simmons. Wow. And I think depending on, now we're assuming here that Governor Lamont is reelected. Yeah. I think Ryan Fazio has a lot to say about that. But I think how Ryan Fazio comports himself, if he doesn't win, could set him up to be sort of the future leader of the Republican Party and give him another chance as well. But there are a lot of Democratic candidates who want a lot of things, and it's going to be incumbent upon really a strong chairman to sort of set the chess pieces. You know, Rosa DeLauro may retire, so does Eric Russell, who's the treasurer, want to, you know, run for Congress. That's a potential thing. I think, you know, we may see Joe Courtney retire as well. So there's a lot of openings, I think, in the future for Connecticut politicians.
Catch more from John McKinney and Tom Dudchick and the whole panel coming up this Sunday morning at 10, WTNH TV News 8 and the Capitol Report. John, as always, we thank you. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Great. Thank you, Paul.
All right, good stuff there from former Republican State Senate leader, Fairfield County's own John McKinney. Right here, you got it on WICC.